and withdrew from the race. Professor Okaidze Musi and Mr. Temba Piri. So from the 15, we'll be interviewing 13 now. Remember, whenever we are going to interview, we are going to shortlist, we subject candidates to state security check or security check. We've done that as the committee. We use the services of Parliament to verify their qualifications. And that also has been done. 10 of the 13 qualifications are verified and are okay. Only 3 are pending. That doesn't stop us to proceed, but we gave them until end of this week, next week, for them to finish those 3. So that by the time we deliberate on our report, at least everything has been done in terms of qualifications check. State security agents report. It's quite a long report. In that report, as follows, because I'm going to read the report. I think last time, honorable members, the committee demanded the report. To be circulated, but after circulation it was withdrawn. But we thought it would be necessary for the sake of not to circulate the report, but to present the report to the committee. Because it talks to issues of individuals. And we thought, I thought that's what we need to do. And generally, this is what we are supposed to do as the committee. I'm informed. We talk about it. There are 2 categories in this report. There are those who have judgment in terms of the financial side of it. And there are those who are alleged having criminal records. Now, of the 15, or now 13, can I allow the subject to read this? So the subject will read the report. What happened after communicating with SSA, the report comes to me via the sector of the committee. So he will have to go through the report, members. It's not a long report. It's only, is it all 15? It's all 15 because they had to go through that process. He will read, don't be fast, because I know you can speak with in a high speed. Just take the members through properly.
Good morning, Honorable Members. Thank you, Chairperson. The report that comes from the State Security reads as follows. It's a pre-employment screening of shortlisted candidates for ICASA Council. Your request in the above mentioned, regard refers. Pre-employment screening was conducted on the following candidates. Advocate Mahlathi Cawegazi Benedicta, Ms. Natalie N. Delport, Dr. Mashilo Buluka, Ms. Nomonde Konweka Siopa, Professor Musi Onkayetse, Mr. Peter Tlapulusa, Mr. Ruben Mutlaluha, Mr. Thabo Makake, Ms. Lulama Mukhobo, Ms. Thembeka Simane, Mr. Ashraf Patel, Mr. Andrew Peto, Mr. Themba Phiri, and Ms. Kate Skinner. No negative information of national security relevance was obtained with regard to the above candidates. According to CIU, which is Crime Investigative Unit information, the following candidates have criminal records, and the fingerprints should be submitted to verify the records. That would be Advocate Mahlathi and Mr. Ashraf Patel. All candidates have been confirmed to be South African citizens, and the following candidates have negative records as Mr. Mashangwane. They have negative credit records as Mr. Posa Mashangwane, Ms. Lulama Mukhobo, and Ms. Thembeka Simane. It should be noted that the inability of a person to manage his or her finances could pose a security risk. The pre-employment screening is valid until the candidates are appointed. The appointed candidates should complete the 204 forms that must be forwarded to the SSA in order to conduct the necessary vetting investigation, at the end of which relevant security clearances will be considered. Thank you, Chairperson.
Members, that's the report, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Could the Secretary please just repeat the names of those that had negative credit findings?
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. The three candidates that have negative credit records are Mr. Posa Mashangwane, Ms. Lulama Mukhobo, and Ms. Thembeka Simane. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, this helps the committee when we go through the interview, check the candidates on those issues so that they can themselves tell us what how far are they and all of that. With if it's a bank, with the bank, because there is nobody. I mean, very few people who don't have a credit record. We borrow money from the bank. We have all those things. So, but as we question people, we need to probe so that we understand from the candidate how deep the problem is. Members, that's the report. Should we agree that we go ahead on those bases? Honorable Kalago?
Yeah, Chair, I want to support you that we go on those bases.
Just to remind members,
Just to remind the honourable members, we move from the basis of our last interviews for the SABC and am I audible? SABC MDDA. So the time is 40 minutes, but it depends to the chair. If you want, the chair can allow a few minutes over and above that. But there will be candidates where we spend something like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. So we'll assess. Members, can we? Are we ready to call the first candidate? Ready? Yes. The first candidate is Thembe Kasemane. I assume that you, all of us have CVs. All of us have summaries of CVs, apart from the actual CV, there is a summary that is circulated. Can the candidate, because she will be a bit far from me, can you mean close so that I can see it as well? Off or our phones, or just place it in a mode where we don't hear. Are you okay, Mama Sabane? Is your phone on silent? Okay. I hope you. Okay. Do you have water? You want more than that? Give her another bottle. Or you can put bottles there next to the candidate's chair, bottles of water. Welcome, Ms. Semane. Am I right? Are you Semane or Simane?
Semane.
Yes. Welcome to the panel. Of the Portfolio Committee on Communication. we'll first of all, before we start, we'll request you to relax. To relax because it's not really a question and answer session. It's a session where each member will probe one area and then you discuss that area. It's not a yes and no question, session. It's a session where you need to elaborate on issues so that we understand exactly why you are here. First of all, I'll have to give you space as the person who are interested or who is interested to be part of ICASA counselors. They are counselors, they are not the board. Why are you interested in this? I mean, there are so many workplaces, there are so many boards and all of that. Why are you interested in this? And maybe tell us as to, after telling us your name, your surname, and all of that. And over and above, tell us if you don't have any interests in ICASA. The interest can be, we have a person who's working in, relative working in ICASA, and all of those things. Disclosure. You disclose your interest. Maybe you have a business with ICASA and all those things. Tell us those things so that we are clear that we are dealing with a person who's clean, over and above the security check and the qualifications check. But also tell us more about your qualifications. And if there is a, whether it's credit record or criminal record that you have, because those are the issues that can disqualify you as a candidate. I hope I'm clear, and I hope you have taken a sip of water. You have cooled down a bit. Over to you, ma'am.
Good morning, panelists. My name is Thembeka Semane. I will start with maybe why do I want to serve in the ICASA Council. I think at the beginning it was because I just, it's topical, maybe the first one that there is the data costs are very high in South Africa, even compared to countries that are least developed than us. That is a simplistic reason for my interest. But at a more serious one is because in conjunction with that, we, in terms of the developmental stages economically, we are at a stage where we are in the technological revolution, fourth industrial revolution, which is more technological based. So a link to that, in order for the country to develop, the costs that are driving that has to be low. So it's linked to the data cost and all other communication costs. So my reason and interest to serve in ICASA is to make sure that that developmental goal and agenda is accelerated and achieved, because underlying that is also the issues of inclusivity in terms of making sure that the have-nots also are able to be part of the communications and also telecommunications space. Then the other reason I wanted to serve is because ICASA is one of the institutions that is, from my opinion, well-governed and is a regulator that has matured. So I think I will be able to maintain that kind of quality in terms of the institutional capabilities and also add value in terms of making sure that it grows, it doesn't regress in terms of the way it is governed. The other part for my interest is that I do have a diverse skill set. I have a background in finance and financial accounting, as well as in governance and economics, and also serving in other boards, and also I'm a regulator. So I think I do have the prerequisite skills to be able to add value to the council, and also to add value in terms of how we regulate and also govern the institute, and also achieve developmental goals for which the institution is supposed to advance. Then I think in terms of my background, in terms of credit checks and whatnot, what I remember is that I'm currently in a kind of I won't say a legal battle, but there is an issue between me and the body corporate for a flat that I own here in Cape Town. There's an issue about levies. The flat was managed by an agent. It's a long story, but I've asked a lawyer to assist me to clear my name on the matter, because the body corporate did attach rent for the property, and they took that, but they are refusing to issue me with a clearance letter. So I've returned to the National Credit Regulator to assist me to get the clearance, as well as, and I've also asked a lawyer to help me with the judgment to receive the blacklisting against my name.
Okay, so you have a letter that deals with this, that clears or
we're still in the process. So I have enlisted the services of a lawyer to assist me with the clearance letter.
As far as you remember, that's the only thing?
Yes, as far as I know, that's the only thing, yes.
Okay.
I don't know of any other thing. I've never had a criminal record.
Are you driving?
Yes, I am driving.
You don't have a speed fine? Because that's criminal record.
Oh.
No, but it's fine. It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay. Members, that's Ms. Semane. Can I start with Honorable Kalako?
Morning, Ms. Semane. For me, just a few questions. Maybe if I look at your CV, under work experience, we are still serving into about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 boards or council, with the council. Because if I see yes, some of them you started in April 2016, the other you will end 2019. But there you are serving in a regulating committee. And then you are serving also in a state affairs board, which your term ends in 2019 also, around July. And the St. Parks, but it ends next year, the St. Parks one, around March. And South African Heritage Resource Agency, which ends 2019. So, well, the other one ends, they have ended in August. The first question to me is, how are you, if it happens that you are one of the candidates which are successful, how are you going to cope with this situation and serving also in ICASA? You know, councillors in ICASA are full-time. So how are you going to cope?
Thanks for the question. First of all, the regulator that I'm in is part-time. It's very part-time. We don't meet as often, unlike the ICASA one. And as well as the other boards, you said the Sun Pass is coming to an end next year. The EAB can come to an end as soon as the Property Practitioners Bill comes into effect. If it comes tomorrow, it ends. But it's just that an elaborative term, that is 2019. But in terms of time allocation, I'm not working full time, so I do have time, and I will be able to make time, because the other things that I do are on a part-time basis, and every board you have to sit at least 4 times a year, so there is plenty of time in between to avail myself and dedicate time to serve in the ICASA Council.
The second question, Chair, is, can you briefly explain or demonstrate your understanding of the role of ICASA councillors and how that role is distinct from that of other accounting or from that of other accounting officers in boards or other councillors? Maybe giving just an example.
Okay, thanks. In terms of the role of the ICASA councillors, I think it's a two-fold governance role, in that as a council, even though you are not called a board, you are playing an oversight role over the institution, which is the ICASA itself, and you are also playing a regulatory role, which is the second leg of your governance responsibilities over the sectors that fall under the ICASA regulation. So my understanding is that you will have to discharge your fiduciary responsibilities as a board, or in terms of you being a council, all the fiduciary responsibilities of an accounting authority that will be, and then you will have to be a regulator to the sector, to the broadcasting, to telecommunications, postals, and all the other sectors that you are playing in a regulatory role on. That's my, in a higher level, that's my understanding.
There's an often contested terrain between, it's not only between government and ICASA, around where the final authority resides, especially between the government and the councillor, the ICASA itself, and then the industry also. There are those differences which are around. What is your take on that, specifically around independence of ICASA?
In terms of the ICASA Act, it is a constitutional institution, so that's where it draws its powers. And in terms of the same Act, it does elaborate who, in terms of where it should, the reporting lines in for the ICASA Council. So I think the authority doesn't rest, I would say, with the minister. It is with this with Parliament in terms of practical reporting lines. Then but the issue of contestation, I would say, of powers between the regulated entities or companies and the ICASA is always there, because they will always push for co-regulation and also co-governance on the side of the entity. But what I think is important is that for all stakeholders have to know their boundaries and all the acts, all the legislations that are governing each industry. They set clearly the powers of the regulator and also the powers of the minister, as well as the governing entities' board's powers. So everybody that in those acts has their own space, spelled out how they should play. What it normally causes, I would say, friction is maybe at times people don't understand where they should be playing. Maybe the regulator is overstepping their boundaries or somebody else. But what I think is supposed to continuously happen is a workshop for everybody to understand your boundaries as a regulator. What is it that you're supposed to do and not do over the entities that you are regulating, as well as the minister, so that there is no confusion. But all the legislative frameworks within which ICASA is supposed to discharge its mandates is clear. The powers for each, for the regulator, the minister, and also the boards or the accounting authorities of the entities. So if everybody is fair enough to respect each other's boundaries, there should be harmony. But it does happen, especially when it comes to regulation, even on the institutions itself, whereby you find that maybe executives also want to co-govern with the council, and maybe the council is stepping on the toes of the executives. So that it needs a kind of understanding and maturity to be frank about those things, but also to be constructive in terms of understanding your role, so that you are able to serve the South African public well.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Welcome, Ms. Mani. Wanting to know, apart from your board work, those boards that were listed there, do you have any other employment? Do you consult to anybody? How do you pay the rent?
Okay. In terms of, I know I'm not in any full-time employment of anybody. I do have a company, but I'm also studying, so I don't have time to fully push my company, if I can put it that way. So I haven't been able to maybe do business. No, I'm just concentrating on the board, and that's it. That's why I was saying I will have time to dedicate to the ICASA functions. And in terms of how I pay my rent, I think the money that I get, I don't live a five-star kind of life. It's more than sufficient for me to cover my basic needs.
Is that from your board fees, basically, that you get it? Okay. And what is your company? What are you're trying to establish a company? What does that supposed to do? Do you have any clients there?
My company is a consulting. I'm also a registered accountant. No, I don't have any. It's just there. I don't have any clients. Oh, I think I forgot to also answer the question of whether or not I've got interest in. I don't have any business interest in the cars. No, at this point, I don't have any clients. I think I'm not as flexible as I would love to. I think when the time comes for me to pursue business interest, I have to step down from the boss and everything and just wholeheartedly do that. For now, I'm just serving in the capacities that I'm serving.
You talked about one of the main issues being the high cost of data. How do you understand that? What makes you think that A, it's high, B, what contributes to that high cost, and what do you think should be done to lower the cost, and ICASA's role specifically in that?
Okay, from how do I understand it to be high, I'm also using the data, so I know it's high because I have a first-hand experience of the data cost. And also in terms of the reports that do come in terms of regulation reports that do come in when we are compared with the other countries, maybe at the same developmental stages as us, it's always said that our data costs are high. But in terms of ICASA role or what has to be done, I think the major problem is lack of competition in the market. We've got three big players in that space. There might be smaller ones, so the easiest or a way to bring them down is to, number one, open up the market for other small players. And I can see now there are, for instance, where I stay, there are other providers that are coming in, but I think it's not opened up enough for the cost to come down, because once you bring competition and is done in such a way that the competitors compete in terms of pricing, then that's where the consumers are going to benefit. But for now, with the few players that they are there, I think ICASA has done its part in terms of trying to bring the cost down, but because there are few players in the market, so the customer doesn't have a wide range of providers to choose from, that is contributing to the data cost not being as low as they're supposed to be. So I think in terms of our regulation, or the ICASA regulation, in terms of how it regulates the market, the focus will have to be making sure that there's more competition, that the space is opened up. And it's not only in the telecommunications or ICT sector. In general, in the South African economy, you can look at the Competition Commissioner's report. It's concentrated. There's only few players in any industry, and there's always monopoly, so that's a major problem. But then in terms of what is within the mandate of ICASA, it has to open up the market.
You had good opinions on the independence of the regulator, and you are a regulator already. Do you think it's essential for a regulator for its independence to be protected from both political and economic interference? How important is it, the sort of independence of the players in the marketplace, do you think?
It is very important that the regulators are protected, and more so from the political interference. And I think ICASA is very fortunate for it being a constitutional entity in terms of its formation. Reason being that is if there is protection from both political and economic, which means the players themselves, it provides for objectivity, and also you are able to have room or space enough as a regulator to discharge your regulating responsibilities. And I think in the ICASA side, it's also fortunate that I've seen that I also applied, they are going to have a consumer advisory body, which is sometimes missing the voice of the consumer, because at the end of the day, it's the consumers that are bearing the brunt. So it's important for the regulator to be protected on both sides. And also, to strongly advocate for the consumers to be represented, because we don't have enough consumer advocates in the regulation space, and that's where the prices are determined. And the consumers are the ones who are paying.
Thank you very much, Honourable Matisha.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Understanding. Okay. Did ICASA have a role to play in ensuring that the SABC avoided the way that it recently imploded, and how it was abused by what one can call narrow political ends? Could and should ICASA have played a more meaningful role in mitigating the SABC disaster? And if so, how?
Thank you. That is very true. From my following, being an outsider of the of how things unfolded at SABC, I wouldn't think it squarely rests with the regulator. It's a symptom of breakdown in governance. It's a governance problem, and then I think the bark on that side, it will have to stop with the political authority, with the executive authority. It rests on the political side. To the extent that there were no breaches or interferences with regards to the licensing or the regulatory part of it, I don't think ICASA would have had to take responsibility for the happenings in SABC. But I haven't, to be honest with you, I haven't looked at it from the perspective of the regulator having failed to play its role. Because also when you regulate, you don't want to, as I've had alluded firstly, that you don't want to step on other people's territory. So you are mindful of the role that you should be playing. But the problem is unfortunate for our country. There is this deterioration of governance in general. And it's mainly, obviously, you can blame it on the political side, but also it's a character issue. And you can have all the kings, but you can't regulate characters. So if people go and get into positions for purposes other than to serve the country, then that's a character issue. It's not something that you can either solve by regulation or governance itself, but the systematic problem from my side is the failure of the governance systems and also the poor administration on the executive side within the institution we are referring to. And I don't think it's a fair and reasonable expectation to have expected ICASA to come into that, unless there were breaches in terms of the licensing.
Thank you. I understand. Thank you, Chair. ICASA is responsible for regulating telecommunications industry in the public interest and to meet and ensure affordable services for all the people of South Africa. Our telecommunications services affordable and globally competitive? And if not, what mechanisms can ICASA apply to achieve all those goals? So as to do that, if you were to be put on the board, what is it that you're going to do to ensure that all this is achieved?
Thank you, sir. I think the first answer would be in terms of whether or not our telecommunication costs are cheaper and globally competitive. The answer would be no. I think, as I've said, is the answer would be no. As I've alluded firstly when I started the interview. The second part is what would ICASA have to do? I think it also goes back to what I was saying, that in general or in a nutshell, the problem with the South African economy in each and every sector industry is monopolized. we've got few players. Also, there, if you don't have many, like for instance, if you only have two shops to buy bread from, it's easy for them to charge for the consumers to be a price taker. But if you've got 100, so everybody will compete for your rent. So the main problem is that the space is not competitive enough, so it doesn't provide a room for prices to go down. So that's why the consumers will always pay higher. So the solution, I think what the Competition Commission is doing in terms of taking the monopolies heads on has to be advanced. You have to make sure that you create a more competitive economy in each and every industry. So you've got to have more players. So there has to be, I think, linked to all the other, I would say, developmental agendas and transformational agendas. You have to bring more players, small players. You don't have to have just one or two industry players on each sector. You have to bring more competition, then the prices will go down.
I think I understand. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Thaddee. Morning, Ms. Simane. Are you fine? Okay. digital migration, what do you understand to be the role of ICASA in that space?
Okay, I think as a regulator, I think is to maybe push for it, the digital migration, because we don't want to leave behind. As I've said, that we have to. I think the role of the regulator is a bit complex, but I think from what I've been following is that we've lagged behind in terms of where we are supposed to be. So that's where I think the regulator has to push for digital migration to happen, because as I've said, we are in the fourth industrial revolution in this technological phase. So we don't want a South Africa that is lagging behind in terms of advancement like other economies. So that is the space that I think as a regulator, they have to play a lead in terms of making sure that we do achieve the goals that has to be achieved.
The Broadcasting Act, surely you have gone through it, and I suspect you might have picked up some gaps that might need to be closed to ensure that the Act does assist ICASA to perform the work that it's supposed to be doing. Can you just share with the panel?
When I looked at it, I just looked for whether or not they is it set out what the regulator is supposed to do or not to do. Obviously, it does touch on in terms of how the regulator is supposed to discharge his mandate. And also, what I just saw what I was looking for. That is clearly spelled what the minister is supposed to do, what the regulator is supposed to do, and what the boards are supposed to do. But in terms of the closing of the gap, I think any piece of legislation it has to be a living document, because we are in a changing world. So I didn't look at it with those eyes, but for me it was just important that they are set boundaries, because I think for the current, even in its current form, I don't think it's fully implemented. But if there are glaring needs for it to be amended also, then it's when maybe as a regulator will take it forward. But I don't want to tell lies. I didn't look it all from that perspective. So I was just happy that each and every party has there's role clarity in terms of who should do what between the board of the entities, the minister, and also the regulator.
More often, we politicians are accused to be interfering with the work of councillors in this instance, in the course of us conducting our oversight role, including the shareholder. What's your take on that one, and how best can we deal with that particular challenge?
Thank you. Yes, I think let me just say that both industry and also maybe the regulator bring you to our space, because you don't just come there uninvited most of the times. So I think the best way I've been on this one is always keep the lines of communications open, and also to be transparent on how you regulate. And I think on the for the CASA Council, the fortunate part is that already there is a need. They've already moving on the direction of making sure that there's consumer advocacy, because that's what also give room for maybe the political politicians to encroach into the regulatory space. But I think it also comes with human beings. Everybody want to advance their own interests. The industry want to push for their own agenda. The politicians, whatever opportunity comes, they want to shine, even if it's something that doesn't provide for them for that. So as a regulator, the most important thing, because you always bear in mind that we have to uphold the constitution, especially for ICASA, and also the legislation that governs all the entity itself and also the other industries. So we have to stay strictly within those boundaries, and also, but keep, cordial relationships with all stakeholders whilst being fair and firm.
Was that your last question? Thank you very much. Members, we are 1 hour behind schedule, so that was our last question to Ms. Semane. Here are the members, if you want to ask anything, they are ready for your questions.
I think, as I've said, like, for instance, now that we are in the fourth industrial revolution, which is technological based, how are the members planning to take the country forward and making sure that we don't lag behind?
Honorable Kungbela?
I think the approach of leadership is about deploying proper skills to these institutions so as to ensure that the mandate in particular, as articulated for ICASA, that of ensuring affordable services and regulating the electronic communications to the extent that the issues of social cohesion are realized. We believe that how then the skills are deployed and how governance issues are put in place with the mandate in mind, that's the area where we're intensifying. We hope to move faster in that context. It's a big question, by the way. It's not a small question.
Just one last one. Okay, I'm going
to go now. No, I'm not saying go. But these members are not looking for a job.
No, it's
okay,
just...
Okay, go ahead.
The last one is, I think in terms of the skills in South Africa, we're lagging behind. I think on the competitiveness report, we're lagging behind in even in terms of the skills for the future. So we might face in the skills sector a very blinker future. So also on that, what are the plans? Like we're also looking at you for solutions. So how are you, what is happening that we don't see as a public that is going to make sure that we are better positions than we are now?
Members, you are listening. There's a question. Is he ready? Are you welcome, Honorable Ndose? I think it's still settling. Yeah. Do you want to respond to questions, Honorable Shin?
This is a question I don't think any of us can really answer effectively. But the basic problem with skills is basic education, for starters, and the poor quality of teaching. So that's where we need to start. But obviously there has to be fast tracking of those that are already past school age for special courses to get them computer literate, because the access to digital information is critical for these people to try and get included in the digital economy. So there has to be either through NGOs, through technical colleges, through local administration, smart centers, info centers, that sort of thing, to get people familiar with being liberated through technology devices. And that's because people that are perhaps functionally literate can be made to be productive and feel included and contributing members of society through digital devices. So there needs to be let's get basic education right. And then those that are of an older age, bridging courses, exposure to digital information, digital systems, and we need government applications that draw people into the information age by dealing with home affairs online, with dealing with municipal services online, those sorts of things. So there's a huge gap there, and we're not doing enough.
Yeah, I was ready to chase you away now. Thank you very much, Mr. Mani. You will hear. You will hear from us. Thanks. Tough question. Yes, sir.
I wanted to propose, if it's possible for you to indulge, if you look at the number of interviews that are going to be done today and the rate, maybe that approach of the other day, if you can consider it. Okay, fine.
Request you, honourable does, to come closer, members. Welcome, sir. I'm here. Welcome. This is a panel of Portfolio Committee on Communication. Just to introduce ourselves and inform us if you, as an individual, you have some interest that you want to disclose to the committee in relation to the environment. whether it's the CAS or the entire communications environment. So if you can tell us about that. We've gone through a criminal or security check, if I can put it that way. That deals with both your credit position and security issues. So feel free to upfront tell us about all those issues. Because we have gone through that, we know who's where in terms of that. So as we introduce yourself, just assist us in telling us about all those things. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, honorable members. My name is Andrew Feto. I have nothing really to disclose necessarily in terms of security. As far as I'm aware, I have not been wanting, been found wanting in relation to the law. But in as far as my credit profile, what I've done as a person prior to coming here, I've actually tried to check my profile just out of interest, because I've observed that this seems to be a normal practice when it comes to this. And I must say that there are two issues of interest that I've discovered in my credit profile in relation to my credibility, and one is something that I don't think that is much of a problem because I have an account.
It's okay, there is nothing major. We have checked that.
Okay.
Yeah. Apart from that, is there anything else that you, apart from the credit and security check, you can tell us more about other things, yourself and your qualifications?
Oh, yes. Thank you. My background has been or is around HR previously in my previous professional life, but as I moved in terms of my career, I currently more focusing on issues of governance, in the sense that I'm participating in a number of governance structures, both private as well as in terms of the public sector. I'm currently the Commissioner for Remuneration with the Independent Commission for Remuneration appointed by the President in the year 2014. But I'm also, from where I come from in the Bakhatla area, I participate in a number of governance structures in relation to our participation in companies. I'm a board of director in a company called Lex Shell 49 that belongs to Bakhatla Bakhafela. But I'm also a chairman of Crown Hill, which is an independent company that focuses on chrome mining. But prior to that, I've also spent more than 10 years in the public service as a senior manager in HR and OD. And after that, I established myself as a business person, in a sense that I established my own company that focused more on organizational development, assisting companies with restructuring of organizations. I'm currently the special advisor to Jose Pilani of Bakhatla, who is also the deputy president of Congress of Traditional Leaders of South Africa. And my participation here is motivated by our interest as traditional communities to have representativity in terms of such important organs of state, so that we can actually ensure that we bring that aspect of the needs of the people in the rural communities. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, members. Can I start with Honorable Shin?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Peto, I see that you are currently employed in two places, Contra Lesa and this traditional Bahatla, if you forgive my pronunciation, traditional authority, is that right? So you've got two jobs there, currently employed. If you become a councillor, you're going to have this, that being a councillor of Ikhasa is a full-time job. You'll have to give up those two jobs. Are you happy to do that? Would you miss them? And what makes you think that your experience in rural areas, traditional governance, qualifies you to be on a highly technical council where you're going to be responsible for licensing electromagnetic spectrum, that sort of issue? I mean, what skills do you bring to a body like ICASA that would be relevant to its area of operation?
Well, having spent more than 10 years, I think, of my career in governance structures, from a water board to a mining environment company to state-owned entities, I think the issues of governance is very critical. But as I say, nothing for us without us. I think it's important that we need to also ensure that there's somebody who understands the challenges from a perspective of rural communities in terms of universal access. And ICASA has that responsibility to ensure access, and I believe that my presence in there would actually assist in bringing a better perspective of the criticalness of ensuring that communities, not only in the urban but also in rural communities, needs to have access to such universal services. And I think I can assist in ensuring that that perspective is brought. But also from an organizational development perspective, I think the makeup of the council cannot only be biased towards technical. We can't have only technical people in terms of engineering, or be biased to legal people. We also have to have in that makeup somebody who brings the OD perspective to ensure that all these things, all the technical skills that we bring, assist us to achieve the objectives of ICASA, which is access, universal access for everyone. The constitution is such that there must be equality, but currently we know when we talk about access, rural communities are still left out, and I believe that somehow my presence in that makeup of technical people, legal people, OD, but also the background will fit in well in the whole structure of ICASA.
Thank you. I also need an answer on the jobs that you resigned, the two jobs that you're currently employed with to become an ICASA councillor. Are you happy with that prospect?
That's the last question. That is your last question.
The makeup of a rural community, my being special advisor, is My apologies. I'm special advisor to COSI, so my job is not seen as a full-time position necessarily. But then as I explained that my COSI that I provide advice to is actually the deputy president of Contralesa. And one of his responsibilities was to actually corporatize the institution to make sure that it is effectively and efficiently run to brand it. And as his special advisor, he then co-opted me to ensure that I take responsibility for the establishment and corporatization of that institution. So yes, if that should that be necessary, I'm happy to actually resign.
I wanted to alert Honorable Dose that I'll... Honorable Dose, may I go more mature? Honorable Dose, it's now your turn. Okay, Honorable Madisha.
Thank you very much, Dumelanda. Through you, Chair, the issue of honesty, of integrity, of credibility are extremely important for the people of South Africa, and whomever gets appointed, that comes first. Okay? Now, you indicate there that you are the CEO, you are the advisor, etc. But then, if you go to what the SABC reported, I think around March, it indicates that there is a commission of inquiry, which actually indicates that there was a great deal of corruption, and you are at the helm of this, thing. I'm not saying corruption. I'm referring to you advising those who are at the top. Do you have a hand there, sir?
I'm not sure what corruption you're talking about. I've never been involved in any corruption. I'm not even sure which report specifically you're talking about with regard to Bakhatla Bakhafela. But yes, traditional communities are always entangled in disputes about traditional, you know, the seat of royalty. And as a result, people will always be looking for issues that they want to bring to discredit those who are actually in power in terms of the traditional leadership position itself. There has been a commission, yes, that has been set up to try and establish the rightful heir to the position of the traditional leadership of Bakhatla. There has been a few before of those commissions. But in the process, unfortunately, people will make allegations. None of those have been tested and proved so far. Thank you.
I wish to put it to you, sir, that you were called, you had to, in line with the questions, Judge Maluleka, etc., you had to basically, explain. And if all these things happened during your time, when you said you're CEO, etc., etc., then we have a problem. Please just indicate. Because if you've got to take this very important position of ICASA, whereas you are at that kind of a realm, it becomes a problem. Just prove so that we then can be able to say you are the best one. Thank you, Chair, and that will be my last question.
No, Honourable Member, I think you must be confusing. I'm from a traditional community. Let me just for the record indicate that I've never set foot at the commission. Yes, I'm aware within the family that there is a painter there that has been very active. It's various royal families, as I've indicated, there'll always be those disputes. But I have never made a presentation at the commission. I've never been accused of corruption. I've never been involved in anything of that sort, including the dispute for the royal family. So it cannot be me. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, honorable member. Now it's your turn, honorable Dossie. And members, these are last questions. We are running 1 hour late.
Thanks. Thank you. Are you not the advisor to Khosi Philani? Okay, so the Khosi in the commission said that his advisors are some of the people to blame for the mismanagement administratively in relation to tribal issues, particularly in relation to corruption. And some of the people have pointed the community has placed some of the blame on you. So we're giving you an opportunity. It's not a blame game. So it doesn't help to keep responding like that to Honorable Madish. It's an opportunity for you to come out clear, even if you didn't go in front of the commission. You are the person that is the advisor, and the chief kept saying his advisors were involved and misled him and all those things in front of the commission. It's your opportunity to say your side of the story, because this will haunt you in our deliberations.
Perhaps I should give a perspective. He is a traditional leader and would have a number of advisors depending on the specific area in which he would seek advice. But for the record, let me just indicate that my advisory since 2014 in particular, when he was appointed the deputy president of Contralesa, I've been deployed there to actually be his proxy in corporatizing the institution, in ensuring that it's branded, it is known, and there are systems in place.
So he diverted some of the powers to you?
No.
But you had powers to take administrative decisions?
No. Look.
Yes or no?
At this point, let's separate Bakhatla completely from my role as special advisor to Khosi. It's in relation to specifically now his role as deputy president of Contralesa. So I have nothing to do with advice on traditional leadership matters.
Okay, I think it's very satisfactory, but I'll move on to the other questions. Now, in your entire CV, I don't see any interest in ICT. I don't see anything that brings you to have an interest or any background whatsoever to the issues that ICASA deals with, particularly because earlier on you were talking about universal access. Aren't you taking a chance? I mean, you are literally a sophomore, because you've really never worked in this space, have you?
I don't know about taking a chance. Of course, I've never worked at ICASA.
ICASA, in the space of ICT and all the issues that ICASA deals with, I can't find any in your CV, any background that makes me understand why you want to be in the board.
Well, my interest developed because I have been...
No. So it's true that you have never been involved. Am I correct?
Involved in what?
Either ICT, questions of spectrum, questions of pay TV. Have you ever maybe done a campaign on data must fall? Anything that you have ever done, because in your CV there is nothing that says you deserve to be in the board of ICASA. I mean, you just have like board qualities, but you can be in the board of Mzinwezi Nsizwa, for instance. But why ICASA in relation to your background? Why do I have your CV? Why must it convince me that you must be in this board?
Bakatla holds 40% in CIATV. Now, for CIATV to actually be in operation, it had to apply for a license. Now, having participated in that process of application and the complications that goes with that, in a way empowers you of what you previously would not have known. It may not be...
In what way? In what way is 40% in CIA and asking for a license empowering you to lead at the helm of the sector? Give us a specific thing. In what way?
No, I'm trying to explain that, look, if you are to obtain a license, you have to apply, and there are processes, and in that those processes, as Bakatla being a shareholder, I had to, as a special advisor, participate in those processes. And there has been inquiries from ICASA that comes to CIA to understand the complications of...
My brother, is it really serious? Must we as a board do this to South Africans? Because you participated as an advisor to an application for a license qualifies you to lead ICASA. Is that what we must give to South Africans? Don't you think you must still spend a little bit of more time understanding everything else, in particular participating in it? You want to lead in the sector. ICASA is a leader. Is that not a disservice to South Africans that you are persuading us on those grounds to put you in the board?
I would agree with you if I was to be the leader solely. But I think the composition requires a diversity of skills, as I've indicated.
Okay, what is the skill that you are bringing? Because you're telling me about an experience of applying for a license. But what's a skill there that makes you be in the board of the composition? What skill?
Knowledge and understanding of the sector and understanding what ICASA does. It's knowledge, but being in there, the skill of governance is relevant. The skill in relation to OT, there are committees there, the subcommittees, and I've indicated my profile in terms of having, in terms of participating in the remunerations committee.
Would you agree that SRC is a governance structure, Student Representative Council? Would you agree that it's a governance structure governing student affairs? So if I was in the SRC yesterday, I was a president of a high school, does that qualify me to be in ICASA simply because I was in governance? In a sense, that's my last question. Thank you, Chairperson. But what is it that you are bringing in this sector? What gives you the grounds to be part of the governance that ICASA is concerned with? What is it? It's not there in your CV, it's not there in your articulation, except participating at a distance, for that matter, as an advisor to an application for a license. You are not sharing anything else, and you're not telling us about any other skill, except maybe like participating in some other non-related to the sector governance structures.
Well, governance is critical, and with regard to the example that you make about the SRC, it is critical that you engage the youth because they're also affected, and there's a perspective that they would bring. Him, a youth understanding, or an SRC or ex-SRC member understanding governance, coming into a structure at a high level, one, you're building capacity, for future governors there by bringing in those people. But they also bring the perspective of youth, because at a particular, as you understand the diversity in relation to age, you may not understand certain issues that the youth are faced with, and their presence in there would actually give
a perspective. What are you bringing?
Governance.
Thank you very much. When I asked the issues of interest or conflict of interest, you said there is none, but Bakhatla, is it Bakhatla owns 40% of CIAT?
Yes,
and you are part of that?
Bakhatla is part of that. I do not own shares in CIA. Bakhatla does own shares, and I'm not there. I'm not full-time there, as I've indicated. I'm now focusing in a particular area. My role there is done. And previously to that, I had restructured the Bakhatla and implemented systems there. Once done, I've moved a special advisor. So Khosi would then deploy me to various areas where he believes I may be relevant at that particular time. But I'm not a shareholder as a person at CIA, so I see no conflict of interest there.
Should I have two hands here? No. Chief, unless this is your advisor,
he is not going to ask any questions. Thank you.
I'll give two of you to ask questions, and that will be all. I'm very genuine on this thing of because 2 o'clock will come, and I want his contribution because he's leaving at 2. Honorable Kungbele?
Thank you, Chef. Can you answer the question of with regard to displaying your understanding of one or two elements that define the mandate of the CASO?
Well, primarily CASA is responsible for the implementation of the ICT Act. It does license providers of telecommunication. It also regulate and impose conditions to the licenses that it issues to those providers of telecommunication and postal services, but it also regulates the signal providers. It has a quasi-judicial responsibility in a sense that when there's non-compliance, it has the responsibility to hear complaints and to also take appropriate action and provide sanction in that respect.
You see, what you've just articulated now is how ICASA executes their mandate. I would have preferred if outside that you would have articulated the proactive purpose of ICASA, taking into account the context of the challenges that the CASA is supposed to deal with. Naturally, when they implement, they will do those things. Make sure that what you say, anyone can do that. Well, why did we need the CASA in the electronic communication mode in a space?
Well, Well, the Constitution talks about equality. But then when it comes to access to telecommunication, there's a serious divide between people in the urban areas as well as those in the locations and the rural communities. And ICASA has a responsibility to ensure that there is access to all in line to give effect to the constitution, to provisions of the Constitution.
Do you know of the series of national outcomes of government that all departments are working towards realization? And if so, which one is closely related to the ICASA or ICASA?
I think the NDP articulates the importance of universal access as far as telecommunications is concerned, and I think ICASA comes in handy there to ensure that there's implementation and that our community get access equally.
How did you to specifically say this particular outcome as defined? These outcomes are specific from outcome one to outcome 40. If you can say this outcome, which is characterizing this fashion, is directly linked to what ICASA is supposed to be doing.
It is outcome 6, as I've indicated, which articulates universal access to ensure that all citizens have access to telecommunications.
Last question. If you have having applied to be a board member of ICASA, surely there must be something that has interested. Recently, do you know of any challenges which you know that ICASA, the area of work of ICASA, has been actually involved in? And what do you think would be your role in actually contributing in dealing with those?
One, we have the issue of data must fall, which is very critical to society, because in that space, when you analyze what is happening, you discover that our people are taken for granted, and the poor communities, unfortunately, suffer the most in that respect, including the students. You look at the profit margins of South African telecommunication sector as opposed to their counterparts outside the country. You realize that South Africa is actually, or providers of telecommunication in South Africa, are making a great killing, which doesn't make sense. So somehow I think there is a gap in terms of our regulatory framework. And it is of interest to me, in a sense, that I would really want to ensure that...
How would ICASA deal with the data must fall?
I think it needs to regulate and impose penalties that will ensure that data becomes reasonable, because, as I've indicated, that it is actually a right to our to all South Africans to have access. If you look,
why is it possible to reduce data cost from your knowledge?
If you look in 1994, cost of termination was about R3.20 in 1994. Today we are talking 20 cents. So you can see that it is possible, and the motivation by the service providers mostly is that they would like to recover their investment on the infrastructure. But you know, for example, in the road infrastructure, when you give independent road constructors to construct a road and recover their cost, there's always a limit. You'd give them that space to put their own investment and give them a particular period, let's say 10 years or 20 years. After that, that road belongs to the state. But in this sector, unfortunately, we do not have such regulations. If they've been able to manage to move from coal termination at 320 to 20 cents currently, it means that it is possible that coal termination can cost nothing. But I think it is important that there is advocacy empowering our communities and our end users in respect of their roles and responsibility to become aware of what they can do. This, for example, Data Must Fall, is an initiative by the converted, if you will. But there's still a lot of people who are not aware that they can make noise about this to a point where data can actually be reduced. But from ICASA point of view, we need to ensure that we regulate to an extent that we understand the investment of those who develop infrastructure, and also ensure that there is a cutoff point where we say, at this point you should have recovered your investment, now you need to ensure that you have competitive rates. But the introduction of community providers as well. Thank you.
Do you have any recent memory? A time where ICASA witnesses had been displayed in public?
I didn't get that.
Do you have any recent memory? How do I put it? Where ICASA in executing this work in a more prominent way displayed some challenges or weaknesses as ICASA?
No, sir.
No. Mr. Patterson, you have 3 minutes.
Okay.
Mr. Remember, if you take a long time, you will leave us here.
Okay.
And we'll leave this hall at 10.
Okay. Mr. Pat, I want to go back to the CIA issue. And you know why I'm going back to this particular issue? It's because you are not talking to the panel here. You are talking to South Africans at home there. So I want you to convince South Africans that the role that you played and you continue to play there does not constitute conflict of interest. I want you to go back to that space. If you were to appoint a councillor of ICASA and that particular role, the CIA issue.
Well, honestly and truly, I personally do not see any conflict. What might happen in the future could be, I don't know, because they already have a license, which of course is issued by ICASA, so there's no way they're going to be applying for a license for pay TV again. But they may apply, should they find it necessary, for a free-to-air TV license. And under the circumstances, obviously, we have a code of conduct in which I may have to request to be excused from that process should my role actually be such that I may have to be part of the process.
The Broadcasting Act number 4 of 1999, how relevant is it to ICASA?
It is relevant because there are regulations that are attached to the Act itself. Remember that the Broadcasting Act
as well as the postal and telecommunications were collapsed into one to form the ICASA Act, but there are still those regulations that are attached to the Act of 1999, which ICASA still implements. In that sense, it still remains relevant.
More often, we politicians, including the shield, are accused to be interfering with the work of councillors in this instance. If appointed a councillor of ICASA, how do you find yourself dealing with this particular challenge?
Well, that debate will always be there, whether it's interference or the shareholders find it as a responsibility. But I think the articulation of roles and responsibilities in terms of the shareholder as well as councillors, it's important that it should be clarified. Legislation provides directive in that sense. Now, you know, councillors are expected to be ethical in their leadership, and if there's any request from the shareholder that actually goes against the provisions of the law, we have to outrightly refuse to do anything that goes against the law. Should the shareholder insist, it is in the best interest of a particular councillor, say in this instance myself, to put it in writing to the shareholder that I cannot implement what you request me.
The very last one, just very briefly, take us through the process of appointing councillors of ICASA, very briefly.
Well, I think there's a public expression of interest for public to actually submit and motivate via somebody would nominate, or a structure or a grouping that would nominate somebody to participate. And this process is managed by Parliament. All applicants would then submit, and there would be a shortlisting of closely qualified candidates. Further, we would now have a process similar to this. From this, I would imagine that the committee would then indulge on the process, debate, and agree finally on who the best candidates are. From the committee, you then go to Parliament for ratification. Once Parliament has agreed to that, the shareholder would then be informed of the successful candidates, and then they would therefore finally be deployed to ICASA. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, sir. Thanks for your responses. Then it means we'll hear from Parliament. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
All right.